afternoon. Welcome to the second hour of We the People Radio. They're on the heels of Jackson Browne's Redneck Friend. Why did we pick that for our theme song, Bill?
Well, I don't know. I like the riff. I don't know.
We did it all those years ago, and it's like, little did we know we'd have to listen to it for over a decade. If you ever do a radio program, be really careful what you pick for your for your little theme song. You'll be in trouble. So, yeah. Talk about our sponsor.
Our sponsor is Pape Machinery, and they are a local John Deere ag and turf dealer. And they are 44 stores strong now in Northern California, Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. So if you go up and see them and they don't have what you want...
They've got 43 other stores.
That's right. They got a lot of other stores they can draw from, which really gives them a big advantage in the market for the customer availability. So go up and see them. They're at 3119 Twinview Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. Or you can give them a call at 226-9226 or catch them on the web at papemachinery.com.
Ta-da!
Yeah.
And the brief free announcement of the day, because we like to highlight local businesses that are actually doing a great job because nobody has any extra money. So,
yeah. So if you're
Bill had to have his truck repaired, we thought we'd throw them a...
Yeah, I know, you know, I've talked to a lot of people, and they're like, ah, geez, you know, where do I find an honest mechanic that can, you know, not take advantage of me? You know what? I found one. It's Robinette's Automotive, and they're at 2251 Hartnell Avenue in Reading, and they'll do a great job for you. They aren't overpriced, and they're an honest bunch of guys, easy to work with. So you can give them a call, 221-6880, and talk to Rusty over there. He'll get you fixed up and get you in and out and take good care of you.
Very nice people. It's nice. Now I don't have to worry. Like, typically, if Bill wasn't home on time, I'm like, uh-oh. Did his truck not start?
Don't have to worry about that anymore.
So now we know Bill will be gone and return. Yay. That was the whole point.
Unless you get trapped in the car wash. I had a little incident yesterday where I kind of got stuck in a car wash.
Spinning brush came down, and it was like, okay, Bill, welcome to the car wash.
Yeah, you're not leaving.
You had to get out and go get the guy to get him out. He was gone for a long time. I'm like, yeah. What the heck? I was just leaving the house to go find him.
Yeah, it was a new one.
And he's like, I got stuck in the car wash. Now, normally you'd be like, oh, sure, Aaron, you're a big idiot. Bill's really stuck in the car wash. No, he was stuck in the car wash. His wheels were really, really clean, though.
Yeah, it went through a couple times.
The things that happen in the real world. So, you know, it's not all unpleasantness. We don't like to come on Sunday and just talk about the unpleasantness. There's so much of it, and we're bombarded with it all week long. It's easy for people to just, you know, stick your head in the sand and, I don't know, just give up. There's no point. It's too late. Blah, blah, blah. Well, if it was too late, the guys that we're talking to this morning would have given up a long time ago because, let's face it, trying to flip the regime in Iran seems like it seems a whole lot harder than getting out of the car wash.
Yeah. Yeah,
I guess
I'm
if we
sure
were going to use a recent comparison. But they just keep pressing at it. And there are a lot of people involved. Can one of you guys or both of you give us your vantage point on the volume of people outside Iran and the kinds of events and things you guys have been having?
Absolutely. And it's what is really important is what you just mentioned, that there is no giving up, and we just gotta keep on going. And what we have outside the country is really built on what we have inside our country, and the 120,000 people who have lost their lives in the last 40 years fighting this government, as Fred mentioned. I hope there would be time sometimes for us to talk about the 30,000 political prisoners who were massacred in one summer in 1988 in Iran. And these were all, people of different ages who were arrested for resisting this regime. They had prison sentences, and at a point, the leader of you know, the fundamentalist Khomeini himself alive. He issued a fatwa or religious decree and had all of them killed. So people of Iran inside the country have paid a very, very heavy price for doing what they are supposed to do, is, you know, resisting the dictators and fighting for their own freedom and democracy. And when it comes to fighting for freedom and democracy, as you mentioned, being organized is one of the main keys. And we are blessed as Iranian people that we've had organizations such as the People's Mujahideen Organization of Iran, or Mujahideen Khalq. They are pretty much known as the MEK. And this is a group that has been fighting for freedom and democracy for over 50 years. Before the revolution, they were fighting against Shah's dictatorship, and they continued doing the same after the revolution. And because of the situation in Iran, because of all of the killings, and quite honestly, in the same norm as a lot of other countries have seen, the resistance movement, the leaders decided to have a stronghold outside the country to stay away from, you know, being completely eliminated inside the homeland, and also understanding that international support is a key to be able to do what needs to be done and not end up, you know, in a military war, international war situation, and what have you. So long story short, our blessing is that the resistance organized has a alternative in place. It's called the National Council of Resistance of Iran, which is basically a alternative to the current regime with a very clear direction that they want to have. You know, the 10-point plan that Mrs. Maryam Rajavi, who is has been elected as the interim president for the transfer of power to people in Iran, she has basically led us with this 10-point plan, that the direction is that for the future of Iran, we want to have, you know, people ruling everything, universal suffrage, you know, free elections, women have the right for their clothing and determination and political leadership and what they want to do, you know, the different ethnicities that we have to have their own rights, and all in all in a, you know, free market economy and a future in Iran that, as far as we are concerned, should be a non-nuclear one, which basically tells us that the whole nuclear thing is a moot point when after the Ayatollahs are gone. And
yeah. So wasting all this time on this agreement that they're never going to follow could be
absolutely
handled by just
absolutely
getting rid of the guy with his finger on the button.
Exactly. So the people of Iran do not want it, do not need it. We have one of the largest oil, gas, natural gas resources in the world. The people probably should know that Iran is three times as large as the state of Texas. And one-third of our country, which is the size of the state of Texas, obviously, is desert. And we have so much area that we can use for solar energy that is unbelievable. And so the alternative energies, using our gas, using, you know, natural resources, pretty much for the next 100 or maybe hundreds of years is gonna suffice what we need. And, you know, nuclear power is, with all of the issues that it has, is really not needed in our country.
Yeah.
Back to your question about, you know, the size of, you know, this resistance. It is organized. We have, in the United States, we have people active in pretty much all of the states, at least 40 some states, just like us, there are organizations that do the community outreach work just the way that, you know, Ross and Fred has been doing, and I've had the privilege of working with them. And we talk to people, we educate, you know, our representatives in terms of the proper policies. We work with them and make sure that everybody is on the same page as what needs to be done in terms of empowering the people of Iran. The same binary thing that you mentioned, the choice is not just war or appeasing the dictators. And in terms of international, obviously, the National Council of Resistance of Iran with Mrs. Rajavi is the key point that we always talk about. Mrs. Rajavi was arrested in France in 2003, and they wanted to return her to the dictators in Iran. And ever since that year, we've been holding yearly rallies, mostly in France. Those rallies grew year after year after year, and before the pandemic in 2018, our rally had about 100,000 people in attendance.
Wow.
In a hall that, mind you, even President Macron had his one of his election rallies in that place, and the news that I have checked, you know, he wasn't able to fill more than 50,000-60,000 seats in that area. And through the same organization that you mentioned, Aaron, we were able to have, in our last pre-pandemic event, the 100,000 people, and we had a huge delegation from United States. Mayor Rudy Giuliani was present. Former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich was there. The former Attorney General, Mr. Michael Mukasey, was there. Bill Richardson, who was the U.S. Ambassador to UN for a while, was there. Louis Free, who was head of the FBI, was there. General George Casey, who was the 36th Chief of Staff of the United States Army, was there. And a range of similar type of personalities from some 50 different countries, UK, Canada, Australia, France. And this was basically one of the areas that you talked about in terms of the international support that our resistance movement has built on its own. You know, getting everybody involved has had a lot of work behind it. And linking this to what we talked about in terms of what the Iranian regime is doing with the money in its pocket. In this same 2018 event that we had in Paris, it was specifically June 30th, 2018, Fred and I and Ross was also there, and that event was target of a bomb plot that was foiled by the France authorities, and an Iranian diplomat in Austria who had gone to Tehran and flown back to Austria with the bomb in his luggage. So he carried this bomb in his luggage coming from Tehran to Europe.
They obviously have amazing security at their airport, note to self.
And he was, because he enjoys he enjoyed the diplomatic immunity. Ooh. You know, they don't search his
bags. Yeah, they don't search their bags.
Yeah.
Wow, that is terrifying. Hold that thought, because I want you to tell us that whole story, because I don't. When Fred had mentioned this to me the other day, I thought, and I missed that. But I think we miss a lot of really important things because we're all busy. I don't know. Well, we're busy.
Our
media is busy telling us a bunch of stuff we don't care about. You know, people who slap each other and stuff like that.
And that's why we get online, enjoy your beautiful theme music, and then we go on.
We try to entertain. It's the least we can do on hard topics, you know, is play a fun tune. So we'll be right back with our guests, Fred and Hamid, and you're listening to We the People. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Struck by lightning sounds pretty frightening, but you know the chances are so small. Stuck by a bee sting, nothing but a bee thing. Better chance you're gonna buy it at the mall. But it's a 23 or 4 to 1 that you can fall in love by the end of this song. So get up, tell the bookie, put a bet on not a damn thing will go wrong. The odds are that we you've been dragging for so long, you're on your knees, you might as well be praying. Guess what I'm saying, if you're going through hell, keep on going, don't slow down. If you're scared, don't show it, you might get out, or the devil even knows you're there.
I don't know, I thought we'd go for a happy break. Two happy songs. Then go back to the regular stuff. okay, so go back to the guy with the bomb, because I think that is just stunning that you had a diplomat that was able to do that and willing to do that.
Right. So this so-called diplomat.
Yeah. Sorry.
His name was Asadullah Asadi, and he carried the bomb, and this information actually came out of the court or trial proceedings that took about 2 years. He was arrested, obviously, before the mission was accomplished. Two people who were carrying the bomb for him were intercepted and arrested before they actually got to our meeting. He got arrested, and there was a little green book that he had with the name of a series of people who were on the Iranian regime's payroll doing these kind of things in Europe. And that information has not been released yet on who those people are. And I will get back to that after, you know, finishing up this part. So this guy carried the bomb to Europe and gave it to somebody to bring it over and exploded in our meeting. And all of the details that came out of the investigation showed that it would have killed thousands of people. And obviously, in a hall that 100,000 people are sitting, if there is an explosion, you know, just the mayhem that it creates, you know, non-bomb related casualties are going to be very, very high, obviously.
Sure.
So he got arrested. He was put on trial. Obviously, you know, as I mentioned, this meeting, it wasn't just us Iranian people. There were over 600 dignitaries from 50 different countries, including the names that I mentioned from U.S., you know, the types of Giuliani and Newt Gingrich and Michael Mukasey and Louis Free and a U.S. general, General Casey, you know. So, all of these people were sitting, you know, in the designated special section in front of the house, and you know, the bomb was supposed to be exploded close to Mrs. Rajavi because she was the main target. So a lot of people a lot of Americans, a lot of dignitaries would have been targeted if that thing went through. So this guy was put on trial, and in February of 21 last year, about 13 months ago, he was finally convicted to the maximum allowed under the law, which was 20 years, and he's serving his term in prisons in Austria right now. And that became a very eye-opening incident for everybody. And when we talked about the two individuals who have recently been arrested here in the United States, this really shows the scope of how those monies that the Iranian regime end up earning are spent, exactly to the point that you mentioned, Bill, that, you know, the money will end up being spent on the wrongdoings that they do, all of these evil things that they do. And I one of the points that I really feel compelled to stress for all of your listeners is that, yeah, for a while, you know, this issue with the Iranian regime, this issue with the Islamic fundamentalism that they want to spread around the world, it was an Iranian issue. Then it became a Middle East issue. Now it is becoming an international issue and an American issue. Somebody is paying for these two guys who have been arrested, who, according to the reports, have been spending a lot of money trying to lure or deceive, I should say, not lure, deceive the security detail of White House and First Lady to get into, you know, into infiltrate them. So
sure.
They are spending money. You know, the reports had they have bought them gifts. They have offered them residences in the luxury apartments. So a lot of money is being spent. And the scary thing is that this was not really the first time that we've seen like this. I, getting ready for this talk, I went back and I looked up a couple of United States Department of Justice press releases. The one that I'm looking at right now is from January of 2020, 2 years ago. And this title is Two Individuals Sentenced in Connection with Providing Services to Iran. And the press release by the U.S. Justice Department gets into the detail of how these two individuals have targeted people like Ross and me and Fred. And it reads that this case illustrates Iran's targeting of Americans in the United States in order to silence those who oppose the Iranian regime or otherwise further its goals.
And these are the, this is the regime, I mean, a regime that would sponsor bombing a large venue. I mean, they were fully behind sending that bomb and had their plan worked, like you said. Thousands of people could have died there. Same people, you know, are financing these two knuckleheads in D.C. trying to infiltrate some of the highest security folks in our nation. And we're sitting down at a negotiating table with them, negotiating a nuclear deal. I don't understand how we can deal with people like that. That doesn't make sense to me.
Bill, it's not only in that area the Iranian government are active in USA. In the other areas, you know, there are, for example, they are also active. For example, at January this year, in Boston, there was one Iranian. He was arrested. his name was Kaveh Afrasiabi. This Kaveh, he was practically, he was publishing the analysis and publishing in the New York Times. And when they got arrested, they realized for 14 years, he was getting, every month he was getting paid from Iranian government. And practically, he was working for Iranian government to promote the line of appeasement in Iran. And practically, the negotiation is good. This kind of, you know, what Iranian government is doing right now.
Sure.
These are the people that not only in the security, in the media, the Iranian government, I think they have a lot of some agent that in this country that I think we need to look at overall. We need to emphasize. We need to talk about this more. That this is more than one or two or three events. I mean, as my friend Hanif mentioned, when Asadullah Asadi he got arrested in Europe, he has the book of the network of the more than 50 people that he was paying money to the Iranian government there. And that is a good experience that we saw what happened in Europe. And I'm sure the Iranian agents, which are active here, that we need to investigate what they are doing here and what is their network in this country. Because it's not only in the security, it is in the media. They have so many elements within this country.
Yeah. It's mind-boggling that we can entertain negotiations with people that do not have our best interests, the best interests of their own people, and they get away with this stuff primarily because we're paying them. We give them the money to do it. I mean, it
Well, and okay, so I'll be the partisan hater here. Don't you find it interesting that this is always under the American rule of Democrats? This is when the Democrats sweep the table, take over everything, and then let's hurry and negotiate with Iran.
I don't get it.
Like, gee, there's nothing to do here. You know, we don't have anything important going on here. Might as well, you know. Go work with people that everybody in their own country hates. I guess maybe that's what they have in common. Might have solved the problem.
And you know, Bill and Aaron, you know, for the sake of not getting into any partisan issues, you know, even if I say that, okay, from a completely non-partisan angle, you want to negotiate so that you don't go to war, fine. You know, no, we are not saying that, oh, don't negotiate because, you know, you're terrifying people that if you don't negotiate, the only other option is war. Because that's the story, that if we don't negotiate, it's going to be war. Even if you want to negotiate, don't close your eyes on the facts. Don't close your eyes on the fact that the money is getting spent in the United States of America, you know, targeting people here in the U.S. Don't close your eyes on the fact that, you know, I do believe, since we are talking nonpartisan, I do believe that when the administration says that our foreign policy is going to be based on human rights, this was announced by the new administration. I know I take it at the face value that their foreign policy is going to be based on human rights. How could you say that your foreign policy is based on human rights and you do not talk about any human right issues with the Iranian regime in the negotiations?
Right. That's a great point.
How could you do that?
Yeah.
So the expectation is really a very logical, simple expectation that you are saying that the previous administration was wrong. Okay, let's accept that you were wrong. You were saying that you are going to do it based on these new norms of human rights. So why aren't you telling the Iranian regime that in 1988, 30,000 people were executed in Iran within a span of few months. And these people, according to Amnesty International, these people were not told to, the families of these people were not told where these people were buried. We have quite a lot of unmarked mass graves in Iran, that thousands of these people are buried, and anybody who cares can just look up 1988 massacre and Amnesty International and read the independent reports that they have about all of these mass graves and how it is a continued crime against humanity, because the families after 30 years are still suffering, not knowing where their loved ones were are buried. How could we sit down and not talk about these? How could we not have a condition that, okay, we'll talk, we'll have an agreement. By the way, you need to let these families know where their loved ones are buried. You need to bring to justice the people who were responsible for it. And by the way, it's the current president of Iran, Ibrahim Raisi, who was one of the key people who carried out the sentences for these 30,000 people. And they openly talk about this in the Iranian regime's media. They openly talk about how they are so proud of eliminating the enemy, which is the MEK. And these are not any secret issues. They talk about it inside the country. International human rights organizations talk about it. And the only entity that is not talking about it is, you know, our own State Department sitting down and talking to these people.
Right.
That's the real kicker on it, is that these guys just seem to selectively choose the parts of history that they want to support, and they ignore the rest, which does nothing but hurt all of you. One more quick break here, and then we'll come back. And
I just want to mention climate change is ironed out.
Oh, so that's
yeah, that's important.
That's right. We've got to get on top of that, because that's the greatest threat we face is climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Coming up on my favorite day, Earth Day. Boo! I'll make sure that we have some we have somebody who can do that topic justice. Gosh, I've got a lot of mean music about that one too. Spoiler alert. So we'll be right back with our guests, Tom Eden and Fred, who don't need to be roped into the Earth Day drama. And you can find us at
wethepeopleradio.us.
Couldn't go through this whole topic without playing a Rocky movie fight song. it would just be wrong. So anyway, it's the least we can do for the resistance is to play the music, I guess. Okay, so what have we not covered that is super important? Things people, you know, there's so much that we don't know about what's really going on there, about your whole, the whole idea. I think most people think, oh, if you're Iranian, you're all down for all the stuff that's over there. So I hope people have figured out that's no longer factual for them. But what are some other things that maybe people, you know, just miss because it's never talked about?
Can I mention something, Aaron?
Go ahead. You can mention two or three things if you'd like.
Sure. You know, when you look at the history of the Iranian behavior, you know, in 2019, is this a good story? What happened in 2019? The Japanese foreign minister, he went to Tehran. And practically, he met the Khamenei in that day, Supreme Leader, tried to ease the relationship, you know, practically to help, you know, the mullahs. And what happened at the same day when they're negotiating with Khamenei, the Iranian Islamic Revolutionary Guard, practically they attacked the oil tanker of the Japan. Therefore, this is what Iranian government in practically how they are practicing there, how is their attitude. Therefore, the reason I mentioned this, I would love to relate it to what's going on today at negotiation today. You know, if you're monitoring the behavior of Iranian government as a negotiation, you will see practically Iranian government are like aiming nuclear guns at the rest of the whole world. And they're using this kind of tactic at the practically negotiation. And practically they're telling, oh, break time to be closing very fast. We can get to the bomb any day. Practically, these are all the tactics Iranian government is using to practically in the negotiation to keep the practical Iranian Islamic Guard out of the terrorist list. Therefore, I think it's important the Iranian Islamic Revolutionary Guard, the force forced to stay on the terrorist list and not to be removed from the list. And that is, I think, a very important factor.
I agree. And I think it's important that people know that. Okay, what else?
Absolutely. So I'm glad Fred covered the current issue, which is as part of the negotiations, you know, they intended to remove the foreign terrorist organization listing from the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, IRGC, the same terrorist group that has been mentioned a couple of times today, are responsible, according to our own Defense Department in the United States, for the death of 600-plus military people serving in Iraq. So the other thing that, Aaron, that I want to highlight is that I want all of your listeners to know that we need their help. I got to tell you that, you know, one of the things, I've lived in the United States for 40 years, a couple of kids, and I always encourage them to take part in the electoral system, use the right to vote and use the democracy that they have in this country to be able to talk to the representative, representatives, in the House, in the Senate, mm-hmm. and tell them what you want and steer them in the right direction. And quite honestly, you know, if they are not doing their thing, step up and talk to your friends and organize and, you know, run for the office and take advantage of this democracy. And one of the things that we have done in terms of the Iranian diaspora, the Iranian American communities, is that we have tried to do the same thing ourselves. I mentioned about a House Resolution 118 that over 250 members of Congress, majority, have already co-sponsored it. And it is a resolution that basically reads that it's expressing support for the Iranian people's desire for a democratic, secular, and non-nuclear republic of Iran, and condemning violations of human rights and state-sponsored terrorism by the Iranian government. So the resolution really covers all of these areas that we talked about today, that we want to basically acknowledge that the Iranian people themselves They want, they desire, they're out in the street to have their own secular and non-nuclear republic established by them paying the price. We want to condemn the human rights violations in Iran. And we want to counter the state-sponsored terrorism. So this resolution covers everything. When anybody who cares to just search for House Resolution 118 in 117th Congress of the United States, we'll read that it covers everything that we have talked about today. It covers, you know, the killing of 1,500 people in November of 2019 in Iran. It covers what Amnesty International has said about 1988 massacre in Iran. It covers the previous resolutions in the House of Representatives. It covers the current Iranian president, Ebrahim Raisi, as being part of the Death Commission, which in 1988 was responsible for the massacre of 30,000 political prisoners in Iran. It goes on by covering the alternative to the Ayatollah's lent support for Mrs. Rajavi's 10-point plan for the future of Iran, and it goes on to the case of the bombing plot in 2018 in France, and mentions, you know, the trial of the Belgian trial and the sentencing of the Iranian regime's so-called ambassador, and goes on and on with resolving that, you know, the state sponsor of terrorism should be condemned, and this attack on the rally in 2018 needs to be condemned. It calls for the countries in Europe to shut down the embassies of regime that are involved in terrorism, especially the one in country of Albania, where the core of the Iranian resistance movement organization, MEK, resides right now. And it, at the end, it basically suggests that, you know, the support should be for establishment of the secular, non-nuclear, democratic republic that the people of Iran desire. So the part that I want to every listener to help us with is, first of all of those who are in California's beautiful first district, drop a note for Congressman Doug LaMalfa, who has corresponded it. And thank him for, you know, doing this. Thank him for standing with what is right, not only here in California and the United States, but standing for what is right everywhere in the world, especially in these troubled days that we see all of these things in Ukraine, that, you know, the world is revisiting the issue that it is important to write, to stay on the right side of the history. It is important to support the people wherever they are fighting for their freedom. And anybody who is listening to this and it's not in California's first district, look up and see if your representative has supported it or not. If they have, thank them.
I just posted that, by the way. I put the link to congress.gov, and so if people click that link, they can see the 252 co-sponsors. You can search it by state. You can search it by party. There are lots of different tools in there. Congress.gov is a very good site, and that's a congressional record, so it isn't a Republican side or a Democrat side. It's just the facts. But you can see who's on there. And if your representative is not, now remember, you don't call your senator's office because this is a House resolution, but your member of Congress should be signed on. And if they're not, you should go find out why.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe they're not paying attention. Okay, that's not actually a great sign, but you could smarten them up. you could point them toward Hamid. I've put information on there about their organization. You could point them toward that. But, yeah, there are 435 members of the House.
If I may suggest, Erin, point them to this program and have them listen to the program on
That's true. There's that. I mean, there are 435 members of the House. There's really no reason that 250 of them would be the only ones that have signed on to support this. It's a resolution, so it's not a law of any kind. It's not going to, you know, do that sort of thing. But it's a really powerful statement. And
I think a lot of attention is being put on the whole Ukrainian situation.
Yeah, it's the only country we care about right now.
Yeah, right. I mean, we can do more than one thing at a time, and it's just really important that we pay attention to what's going on over in Iran right now, because the agreements that are in process right now are going to affect us big time in the future, and so we really do need to support.
And just in case you thought it was a purely partisan thing, you have looks like currently the 179 members of the Republican caucus in the House and 73 members of the Democratic caucus. So if your representative is a Democrat, there's some lifting to be done there.
Yeah.
And why aren't all the Republicans on there, by the way? So
exactly.
I think that's a great point.
Yeah, and the resolution was actually introduced by our own Mr. McClintock in California and Mr. Sherman. You know, a strong Democrat, a strong Republican got together. So it's definitely a bipartisan effort. And with all of the explanation and discussion that we had today, definitely worthy of anybody who is concerned about the current events in the world to basically know and understand that countering the Iranian regime has a third option, and that is by empowering the people of Iran and not thinking about the other two binary options that
yes.
you mentioned.
That's just really important. I hope they go to your website and do some reading, because it's interesting material, and it isn't super confusing or really, you know, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to decode it. It's very well laid out.
Hamid, thank you so much for mentioning Congressman Doug LaMarco's support for Resolution 118. I mean, the congressman continues support for other resolution as well, really, and appreciate it. And also, you know, the congressman is standing for liberty, and he's proving that he's supporting in action the liberty, and really appreciate it, what he's doing.
Yeah, he and Tom McClintock work on a lot of things together, because they're both, the districts are affected out here in the West with the water problems and a lot of that sort of thing. But this really transcends all of that, and these are choices that the American people are paying for. You know, whether they fully understand the issue or not is another matter, but bottom line is you're going to foot the bill on this, and now some of these guys are showing up pretending to be Secret Service. So what does that mean for the future? Because I believe they feel kind of emboldened.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I got to wonder, too, were they the only two that they sent over?
Yeah, well, Dianne Feinstein had a Chinese spy driving her around for 20 years, so, they're not really all that. Apparently, the security isn't all that, and a sack of chips. Yet another reason to be your own security.
They are the only two that have been caught.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I say. They're not depending on the intelligence from only two people in this
country.
See
if Fang Fang has any of her friends here. It's crazy that kind of thing can happen. But if you guys are making some real headway. Screwing up their media, their in-state media and all that, I would imagine that, you know, desperate people do desperate things, obviously. And we can't thank you enough for taking time out of your Sunday afternoon to come and make us smarter. We always need to be smarter. We make better choices when we're smart.
Absolutely.
So, thanks a lot, Hamid. Thanks, Fred.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. It's been a very interesting conversation for sure.
Yeah. No problem, man. We thank you for giving us this time to be able to discuss these issues with you and through you with all of your wonderful listeners. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. And as things come up and as this develops and things, if you think there are things that should go forward, please contact us, okay?
No, absolutely. thank you so much also for the time, and I appreciate it, you know, your help. I really, really appreciate it.
Have a great rest of your day.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. Okay. We'll talk soon.
Bye-bye.
For good.